Okay, so have you ever like looked at two buildings that look super similar and just been like, wait a minute, is that even legal?
Oh,
Well,
yeah.
today we're going to tackle that question when it comes to the blueprints themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're doing a deep dive into Innervest Construction versus Canterbury Estate Homes.
Wow.
This case, it really unpacks how limited copyright protection is for architectural designs.
Right. And at the heart of this case, we're talking about a copyright infringement claim.
Okay.
Innervest, the company that created the Westminster floor plan, argued that Canterbury's Kensington plan was an unlawful copy. So I think what we're going to be looking at today is where is that line between inspiration and infringement in architectural design?
Yeah, and that's the concept we're going to focus on, thin copyright protection.
Yes.
Especially important for all you future lawyers out there.
Absolutely.
Understanding intellectual property when it comes to something like building design is not super obvious, so it's really crucial. For this deep dive, we've got a podcast guide. It kind of lays out the essentials of the case.
Perfect.
We've got a detailed case brief that really dissects all the legal arguments.
Right.
And we've got a standard brief, which offers just like a nice, concise overview. All of this is centered on this really pivotal 11th Circuit decision.
Awesome.
So let's get into it. What exactly do we mean by thin copyright protection when we're talking about buildings?
So basically, in this context, copyright doesn't mean that you can lock down standard architectural elements.
Okay.
So, think of like a two-car garage,
Yeah.
a living room, even the idea of a four-bedroom house. These are all common vocabulary when it comes to architectural design.
Okay.
What copyright does protect is the original way an architect selects coordinates and arranges these common elements into their design.
Okay.
Kind of like how notes are arranged in a melody.
Interesting.
The individual notes themselves, those aren't protected, but it's the arrangement.
Got it.
And this balance, it really encourages innovation in architecture.
Oh.
If every basic layout was locked down by copyright, you couldn't really design new homes.
Right. Super limited.
Exactly.
So it's not about like owning the idea of a kitchen, but the specific way that kitchen flows into the dining room and like connects with the rest of the house.
Precisely.
Okay.
The courts recognize that architectural creativity lies in how these standard components are combined in a novel way.
Okay.
That specific layout, the traffic flow, the placement of windows and doors, that's where copyright protection can exist.
I see.
But again, because this protection is built on common unprotected elements, this scope of protection is what we call thin.
Gotcha. So in the Innervest case, both the Westminster and the Kensington were four-bedroom houses, had a similar number of bathrooms, living areas, dining rooms, like all pretty standard features you'd expect in a family home, right?
Exactly. The court acknowledged these fundamental similarities as being common architectural features. The real legal question was whether Canterbury copied Innervest's original arrangement of these features.
Right.
And to figure that out, courts use what's known as the substantial similarity test.
Substantial similarity sounds very legal.
Yeah.
How does that work when the copyright protection is thin?
So because the protection is thin, the substantial similarity test focuses on the protectable expression,
Okay.
that original arrangement.
Right.
The courts have to filter out all those standard unprotectable components and then compare what's left.
Okay.
It's kind of like saying, let's ignore the fact that both plans have bedrooms. How similar are the specific ways those bedrooms are positioned to each other and the rest of the house?
So they're not just looking at a general impression or overall feeling that the two floor plans are kind of alike.
Not in the way that determines copyright infringement.
Okay.
The comparison has to be much more targeted, looking at the original contributions of the copyright holder.
Right.
This filtering process is really important in cases where there's non-copyrightable elements involved. Architectural designs are a prime example of that.
Got it. So how did the district court apply all this to the Westminster and Kensington plans? What specific differences did they find when they really looked closely at the two?
So the district court did a side-by-side comparison,
Okay.
and they found some really big differences.
Like what?
For example, the Westminster plan had an access point to the attic space,
Okay.
whereas the Kensington plan had a bonus room above the garage.
Oh, wow. That is a pretty fundamental difference.
Yes, a very fundamental difference in how that upper-level space is designed and used.
Yeah, a bonus room versus attic access that's completely different. What else was different?
The kitchens were different too.
Okay.
The Westminster had a U-shaped kitchen design, while the Kensington had an L-shaped kitchen. And beyond just the shape, the court also noted that the bedrooms were different sizes.
Okay.
The Kensington generally had bigger bedrooms than the Westminster.
So different layouts for rooms, like the kitchen, different sizes for the bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Did the court look at how you moved through the houses? Like, was the flow different?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, right. That was another key difference. They pointed out differences in the entryway and how it directed traffic through the house.
Oh.
Even the placement of the windows was different.
Oh, wow.
And that might seem like a small detail, but it can really change the feel of the inside of a home in the natural light.
Yeah, for sure.
These weren't just cosmetic changes.
Right.
They were fundamental differences in the layout and how different parts of the house were connected.
But I bet Innervis was saying, hey, but at the end of the day, both houses have a living room next to a dining room, and all the bedrooms are on one side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Did they highlight any big similarities like that?
They did, and that's a really important point.
Okay.
Innervis argued that the overall feel and some of the relationships between the main living areas were similar. However, because of the whole thin copyright protection, the court had to weigh those similarities against the specific differences in the layout.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the court said the differences were big enough to outweigh any similarities.
So the court wasn't saying the houses looked totally different, just that the protected original parts of the Westminster plan weren't copied in the Kensington plan.
Exactly. They acknowledged that both were designed to be four-bedroom family homes.
Right.
And therefore they shared common features, which, again, aren't protected by copyright.
Okay.
But when they really looked at the unique way those features were arranged in the Westminster plan, the differences in the Kensington plan were just too big for them to say copyright infringement happened.
This is where it gets really interesting.
Yes.
The podcast guide we looked at mentioned a really important procedural takeaway from this case.
Right.
So for all you future lawyers out there,
yeah,
what does that tell us about how these intellectual property disputes in architecture usually get resolved?
The guide highlights that in these cases, it's usually judges, not juries, who make the decision.
Okay.
And this often happens at the summary judgment stage.
Interesting. So can you break down why judges rather than juries decide these kinds of disputes?
These cases require a really nuanced understanding of copyright law.
Okay.
Especially the difference between what parts of an architectural design are protected and what parts aren't.
Right.
Judges with their legal training and experience are considered better equipped to navigate these tricky legal principles and to apply the substantial similarity test correctly, focusing just on the original parts of the design.
So they're basically like gatekeepers.
Yes. They prevent juries from being swayed by similarities in features that aren't protected.
That makes a lot of sense. It sounds like the judge has to be like an architectural critic and a legal expert all at the same time.
Yeah, they really do.
So what does this thin protection mean for architects? Does it make it harder for them to protect their designs?
It definitely raises the bar for architects who are trying to claim infringement. They can't just say copyright was violated because another building has a similar number of rooms or a familiar layout.
Right.
They have to be able to show that the specific original way they arranged those common elements has been copied.
Mm-hmm.
This encourages architects to be really innovative in their spatial relationships and design details because they know that only those unique aspects of their work will be protected.
And for someone who's maybe thinking of building a house or is in the construction industry, what's the takeaway for them?
It gives builders some freedom.
Okay.
They can incorporate standard architectural elements and can even get inspiration from existing designs.
Okay.
The key is to avoid directly copying the unique arrangement of those elements from someone else's copyrighted work.
Right.
The Innervis case suggests that as long as there are substantial differences in the overall layout, room sizes and features,
yeah,
then they're probably...
So for our listeners who are in law school, what are the key things they should be thinking about after this deep dive?
I think the most important thing is understanding thin copyright protection.
Okay.
And this principle isn't just for architectural works.
Right.
It applies to anything that's made up of standard or uncopyrightable elements.
Like what?
Like databases or even software interfaces.
Interesting.
This case teaches you how to really break down an infringement claim and focus on the original parts of the work.
Right.
Innervis versus Canterbury is a great example of how courts apply complex legal ideas to specific situations, and it requires a detailed and analytical way of thinking.
So to wrap up, thin copyright protection means copyright protects the original way standard elements are arranged in architectural designs, not the elements themselves.
Exactly.
In this case, the court really highlighted the differences between the Westminster and Kensington plans.
Yes.
Things like the attic access versus the bonus room, the shapes of the kitchens, the sizes of the bedrooms, the entryway, and even the placement of the windows.
Mm-hmm.
These were all key reasons why they said the Kensington plan didn't copy the protected parts of the Westminster plan.
Precisely.
And like we discussed, because of the need to separate what's protected and what's not, judges often end up deciding these cases at the summary judgment stage.
That's right.
So this brings us to our final thought for you, our listeners. How might this idea of thin copyright protection apply to other areas of intellectual property law where you see standard elements being used?
It's a good question.
Think about things like designing user interfaces for software or even the layout of a magazine.
Yeah.
What should creators who want to protect their work be thinking about?
Right.
What about those who might be accused of infringement?
Exactly.
What do they need to keep in mind?
It's all about strategy.
And at the end of the day, what does it really mean to be original when you're working with basic building blocks that everyone's already using?
Mm.
So the next time you're looking at buildings that look similar, remember the details and the copyright protection are all about the original and unique way things are arranged.
That's a great point.
Thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
My pleasure.